starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching the crows, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello and welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, September the 8th, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. This radio program does not have any corporate sponsors. Therefore, it is for people who really can handle the truth. My website is spingola.com. There you will find information about my books, the Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book 2 and 3. It is a work in progress. Please also visit the website of a friend and listener who has created and maintains the website, spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. All of the more recent audio files of my program are at this site, RBN, that includes the RBN archive files, American Free Press. I do have a new Twitter account, and that is twitter.com/Deanna Spingola. Again, if Dr. Loggeman is listening, please call in at 646-787-1915, and we will be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. My guest today, hopefully she will call in. I am trying to get her via Skype. It worked last time, her Skype number. And adding her to the group call just does not seem to work. And I am not sure what's going on. Make a little adjustment here and see if that works. Nope, it is just not working at all. Anyway, if Dr. Loggeman is listening, please call into the program at 646-787-1915. Dr. Loggeman is a commissioner and advisor on the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, that's CCHR. She is also an associate clinical professor at the University of California at San Francisco in the Department of Medicine. Unfortunately, I don't have her email up here on this computer either. Otherwise, I would email her. Anyway, as I was saying, she is an associate clinical professor at the University of San Francisco in the Department of Medicine, and a licensed clinical psychologist who recently moved her practice to devote herself full-time to addressing the very serious issues in the mental health field. Her websites are drloggeman.com, and the spelling of the name is L-A-G-E-M-A-N-N. And the other websites of interest is C-C-H-R-I-N-T, that stands for CCHRInternational.org, and of course CCHR.org/vets. Anyway, gosh, I'm not sure what to do. Oh, my gosh, I don't know how to get a hold of her, and I don't know what we did that's different than what we were doing, what we did last time when we connected in this very same way. The issue is if I If I call her in another way other than to add her to a group call, then I will go off of Blog Talk. In other words, this will end my Skype call. If I attempt to call her in another way, although I could call her probably with my telephone and tell her to call into the program, I'm just not sure how to do this. This is awful. I've been trying. Whoops. Hang on just a sec. Hello? I'm trying to call you. Okay, here's what you can do. The one that you gave me, your Skype number, and it... Yeah, and it just will not add you to the group call. So could you please call 646-787-1915. Yes. Thanks. Bye. Okay. Oh, my goodness. All righty. Bless her heart. She just called me. And so she will be calling in at that telephone number that I just said. And that is 646-787-1915. I don't see her calling yet. I'm not sure what's going on. Hopefully, I'm on the air. This is kind of interesting. I'm going to just ask the chat room if they have, if they are hearing me. I suppose they are. Otherwise, I would have gotten some, we're on the air. Okay, so as soon as Dr. Lagerman calls in, which I hope she will do momentarily. Okay. Oh, gosh. All righty, okay.
You got me there?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I think it's a Skype issue. I tried to add you to the call at 5 minutes till the hour, and it didn't work. I kept pressing the button, add to group call, and nothing happened. And so, well, anyway, bless your heart. I'm so glad that you're here.
Yes, me too. All right, sorry you had to go through that and that there was a delay.
Hey, strength is good. You know, a struggle builds strength, okay? And so this is good.
This is true.
It's okay.
Okay.
Well, I've introduced you and given the websites and everything. There have been so many things going on recently that we should talk about. And the Robin Williams suicide, which I did mention on previous program, just briefly.
Yeah.
And then also the CD whistleblower on vaccine research fraud. And I did interview Brian S. Hooker, Dr. Hooker, who is the gentleman, the doctor that the whistleblower talked to reveal this information about the CDC. Had him on for an hour. And, oh, my gosh, there is so much going on. And
there is. You know, one of the things, you know, that every time I look in the news, almost every time, there is something that relates to the psychiatric industry or the pharmaceutical industry. It really has become just a pervasive force that is causing damage in so many ways. Like, even things I would never have thought of. You know, I just, this is like, I don't know, it's totally unrelated to things we normally speak about, but I just happened to come across, this was just last week, there was a study, the International Association for Dental Research and the American Association for Dental Research. So these are just, like, this is totally unrelated, but they did a study, they published a paper called SSRIs, you know, the most common type of antidepressant, SSRIs and the risk of osseointegrated implant failure. Meaning osseointegrated implants, those are the, you know, dental implants that fit into a bone. And what they say in their study is just like taken as a given, not as a controversial thing because they have no axe to grind, that SSRIs reduce bone formation and they increase the risk of bone fracture. Therefore, they wanted to study the impact it might be having on these dental implants that fit into bones. Mm-hmm. And they published this in the journal Dental Research, and they found that they did like a large study. It was like 916 different dental implants that they looked at. And the people that were on SSRIs, more than double of those, there were failures of these dental implants because the bones are messed up. The SSRIs, they do reduce bone formation, which is, going to increase the fractures and going to make it harder for the implant to, take hold in the bones. But, here's something that's in the news, and you wouldn't normally tune into that because it's for dentists. It's about, or dental surgeons.
Sure.
But it's, again, the damage that SSRIs are doing.
Right.
SSRIs, it's an important neurotransmitter, serotonin, which is what they affect. It's a very important neurotransmitter for all kinds of things in the body, all kinds of things. And,
right.
We're just seeing damage in so many areas. It's really profound what's going on.
Right. Now, I had a gentleman on my program, Dr. Hal Huggins, who who is a dentist, and he was on in November last year, and talking about dental implants and mercury and that kind of thing. And something else I was doing that I did this week that I read all the time at various hours of the day and night. And I'm reading Our Daily Meds. I think that's the name of it. Yes, Our Daily Meds. And she was talking about some of this situation in Iowa. Now, Iowa is they take in, I don't know why she picked Iowa, whether she lives there, whether she knows people there, but she was talking about the number of eyes is just absolutely amazing, more than any other state. And it's because they've done all of this mental health screening, and because probably they have some Cracker Jack drug reps there that are going around selling all the doctors on prescribing these. And anyway, they had a drought. I'm not sure which year it was, but they had a drought. And the engineers who were looking at the situation were taking samples of the mud in some of the creeks that had gone dry, and what they found was absolutely amazing. They found Prozac. They found all of these SSRI drugs, because water reclamation facilities do not remove those kinds of drugs from the water. Now, they remove a lot of other chemicals, but they do not remove Prozac. So I was thinking, and this is just, and I'm thinking, okay, so Prozac and SSRIs are in the groundwater. They're in the ground, not just in Iowa, but they're in the groundwater all over. And in our area, in Illinois, a lot of our trees are dying. And they start dying at the top. The leaves start falling off the top. And there are some streets that you can go drive through, and there might be 50% of a particular tree. It's usually the maple tree that is either in the process of being dead or dying. Well, I guess you can't be in the process of being dead. Okay, they're either dead or in the process of dying.
Right.
And I'm thinking, I wonder if it's Prozac. I wonder if the water, the groundwater is so filled with other medications in addition to the SSRIs that it is killing a particular, that it is killing or attacking some vulnerability in the trees.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think that's valid to look at that.
Yeah.
It's surprising how much
how many drugs are in our water and in the groundwater. And I mean, this comes from a lot of different things, you know, people flushing drugs, bottles of drugs that people flush down the toilet
sure.
that end up in the water.
And just using the restroom, flows out, I mean, through your urine and,
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't just a matter of flushing them. I mean, it,
mm-hmm.
and so many people do that. Well, I admit, the long time, I used to do that. I've never been on Prozac or any SSRIs or anything like that. It just seemed like a good way of getting rid of pills without putting them in the garbage. It just seemed like a logical thing to do, but never thinking that they would somehow affect groundwater.
That's right. I mean, this is the thing where it's so far-reaching, and we're just seeing some of how broad this goes with the effects of the drugs and how they're showing up in such unexpected ways, you know, not just the direct effects, not just the person who's taking it, but there are many ways that it's affecting, the family, the community, the water,
sure. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I have been studying. By the way, I have my famous Dr. Linda Loggeman shirt on today that says guns don't kill people. People on psych drugs kill people. Okay, I just wanted to let you know that.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Oh, well, there'll be a listener who will be extremely happy with that because he made those. Gary V. from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great.
A beautiful shirt. Mm-hmm. I just love it. I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I have been lately looking. I have always accessed the website, cchr.org. Okay. Listeners, please, please access that website. There are so many resources there. I'm just amazed. And I think that I'm relatively familiar with it. But over the last week, if people will visit that website, cchr.org, and then just up at the top, if you just look under Truth About Psychiatry, look at all the videos. I mean, it's just amazing. The one video that I watched again this week is Psychiatry, an Industry of Death, which is wonderful,
mm-hmm.
wonderful, wonderful. I watched Making a Killing. I have watched Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. I've watched The Hidden Enemy. But then if you move over to Truth About Psychiatry and just click Quick Facts or click CCHR Publications, you are going to find just dozens of PDF files about anything that you could possibly want to know. A couple of them that really impressed me there's a form that parents can fill out to prevent their child from being mental health screened at school. This is so important that people do that because they're not doing it at all the schools, but they're doing it big time in Chicago and in Baltimore and elsewhere. People aren't aware of this.
Yeah.
People need to fill out that form.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm so glad you brought that up because, the mental health screening, all these things that happen in the schools, they get presented in a way that sounds harmless and that usually gets people's agreement because they'll bring it up, let's say there's some kid maybe commit suicide and then they say, wow, this is so terrible. We don't want to have this happen again. We don't want to miss any children that are considering this. So we'll come in, we'll screen your children to make sure this doesn't happen or things like that. And, people are scared and they say, wow, and so they trust it. But these screenings absolutely are a funnel just to more to the pharmaceutical industry, to the psychiatric industry. These screening tests are written by psychiatrists paid by the pharmaceutical industry. They're written in a way that's so broad that many, many children will be flagged as needing to have psychiatric treatment. So it's a way of infiltrating the schools, basically. You come in and you just get customers. That's the intention.
Sure.
That is the intention. They're sold and people fall for it, thinking that it will help and they'll prevent some tragedy. But the intention of these, the makers of them, the users of it, the actual impact of it, it is totally a marketing tool. It is intended to get customers, lifelong customers of psychiatric drugs. So
exactly.
It's very important that parents fill out that form and make it known, and that they tell their school board and their schools and their representatives that they do not approve of, you know, mental health screening of their children. It's not the business of the school. It is not the business of the state. It's not the business of the state, the government, to be screening people for mental health. This is, a complete abuse. This is the kind of thing that Dr. Thomas Szasz, who's the co-founder of CCHR,
right,
that you're talking about, that he called the therapeutic state. It's the alliance between psychiatry and the government. And he pointed out long ago that it was extremely dangerous, and we're seeing that, you know, and how much control and how dangerous it is when you have that alliance of psychiatry and the government. You know, you get the mental health screening. You know, the Affordable Care Act has multiple provisions for mental health screening. You know, money that is earmarked to screen pregnant women for postpartum depression, to, you know, screening in the schools, all kinds of screening. Every single one of these screenings is an opportunity. It's a marketing opportunity. It's basically, you know, you get kind of a sales force out there that's paid for by taxpayer dollars to go and, you know, get customers for the drug companies. So,
indeed.
Yeah, the
and of
that
course
alliance,
they've also. Go ahead.
They've
also promoted this among the military. That's why we have 8,000 people in the military committing suicide each and every year, is because they have promoted this so heavily to the military. And there's no one that can take one of these tests that is going to be not categorized as needing mental health therapy or some sort of, because they're yes and no questions, very, very subjective and geared, absolutely geared, written, devised, so that you are going to be categorized as needing some help. And that help always comes in the form of drugs.
That's totally true. Yeah, it's totally true. And the other thing that I don't know if people know is online, when you see one of these things online, like, oh, take this little questionnaire online and see if you have an anxiety disorder or if you're depressed, same thing. These are written, they're just online marketing fronts. They're written by pharmaceutical companies, basically, to have people test positive. So somebody takes that online, they say, oh, wow, I didn't realize I have major depression or I have social anxiety disorder. And then it will always tell you, you know, go talk to your doctor after you've taken the test. They're really sophisticated marketing. And some of these organizations that people think are support groups, they're advertised as support groups for people with a certain condition. Those groups are often, well, actually, I'm not sure, I don't know if ones that aren't, but these are often.
Try and find one that isn't.
Yeah, they are based, they're funded by psychiatry industry. They've got psychiatrists that are on the board that are being paid by the drug company. So they will have usually these support groups. They'll have speakers come in and, they're going to be pushing drugs.
Right.
It's the ADHD support groups, depression support groups, all these things. Yeah, people, really, it's time to be extremely wary of all of this. And I think more and more people are. I think more people are realizing the marketing that's going on and the damage. I really was happy to hear more conversation about, you know, Robin Williams' suicide was very, very sad. I mean, that was so sad.
Yes.
But it was encouraging to hear people talking about the SSRIs. And, you know, one of the things, too, came out was he had beginning stages of Parkinson's. And I don't know if many listeners may know that some of the psychiatric drugs actually cause Parkinson's symptoms.
Exactly.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So it's, you know, we don't know for sure, but of what his, where his symptoms came from. But we do know that he was on psychiatric drugs that can cause Parkinson's symptoms. And he
right.
had those early symptoms. And those Parkinson's drugs also, as, in addition to the SSRIs, the Parkinson's drugs cause depression.
Yikes.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when you start messing around again with the neurotransmitters in the brain, you're just doing a lot of damage.
Yes. The other thing, too, that I was thinking, and maybe it was something that I read in one of the notes from one of our programs, is that with all mm-hmm. of these people on psych drugs, now, one of the big things that came out right after the Sandy Hook shootings was, oh, the government is trying to get rid of our guns, and this was a false flag, and they did it, and, you know, they all mm-hmm. of this blah, 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 blah. And when you, but if you stop and think about it, okay, if you go to the store, and if you get your FOID card, it's and you try and buy a gun, the one of the questions they ask you is if you've ever been treated for mental illness. Okay, anybody that has ever been treated for mental illness, if they're honest, will say yes, and therefore they will not be able to get a license to own a gun. So it's a de facto uh-huh. disarming of the population. And the more people who are on psych drugs who answer those questions honestly will then be disarmed. And
right.
all of these military men who are coming back who have been on psych drugs, well, they're not allowed now to have guns. So the government really, they're just slyly and being very sneaky about disarming the population using psych drugs.
Right. Yeah, this is again, that the alliance, this the therapeutic state idea that Thomas Dawes said was more of a threat to our liberty than people could imagine and than our founding fathers would ever have imagined. And it is. It's you get the use of psychiatry to say, you know, who owns a gun, the use of psychiatry to put somebody, basically incarcerate somebody, you know, put somebody, lock them up in a psych hospital. Psychiatry has been used for that purpose, for politically to, you know, lock up people for their political beliefs since forever. Yeah. Right now, actually, psychiatry is being used to discredit people, you know, being called conspiracy theorists or, you know, paranoid or... So people who are saying things and speaking out about...
Like you?
it may happen. I don't know. So far, so good.
Maybe we can get the same ward.
That's funny. but this is going on now. And, you know, it's... again, I think it's... There's people asleep and feeling safe and thinking this is America and these things don't happen. Of course, you have many listeners who know this stuff does happen and it is going on. And but, yeah, psychiatry being used to discredit people who are speaking about things that are not convenient for the powers, you know, the people that are in control.
Sure.
So that's a real risk. and something to, you know, yeah.
To consider. A couple of questions out of the chat room. I wonder if Dr. Lagerman would like to comment on the theory that all this political correctness is adding to teen depression and suicides, since it makes them feel helpless and powerless.
Oh, that's interesting. I do think there's something of trying to control creativity and challenging thoughts that teens are having, and that is going to cause depression. If you shut somebody up, if you're suppressing them, if you're not letting them question things, if you're calling them, you know, if you're saying, when a kid is questioning authority, which is good to be doing, that we all should be doing more of, but we've pathologized that in this culture, both basically coming from the psychiatric, you know, world, the diagnostic and statistical manual that, you know, that tells us which of our feelings and thoughts are normal and which of our feelings and thoughts are not normal, but it's all made up and voted on. But anyway, calling kids or people that are questioning the system, calling them as having oppositional defiant disorder, that is very depressing. You pathologize and label and say, you have a mental disorder. You have oppositional defiant disorder. That's a real disorder, by the way. I'm not, like, making a joke up here. That's depressing. You take a kid who's creative and you put him on ADHD drugs. You say, we need to tame you. You're too, you know, you're too wild. You get, you know. I think it's a hard time to be a kid when there's all these factors that are trying to suppress and drug things that are creative and challenging.
Right.
It's our smartest kids. A lot of it is our smartest kids, actually. It's our smartest and most creative kids that are being targeted as ADHD.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because these are the kids that are fidgety because they're bored in school, because the classroom is determined, the level of education in the classroom is they focus on the lowest level. And so the kids that are more intelligent and they just get bored, okay? They're just going to get bored. And so they're going to fidget and they're going to, do all kinds of things to gain attention. Well, not to gain attention. But they're just going to be fidgety. That's just normal.
Yeah.
And so those are the people that are going to be sent to the social worker in the school, and many of those social workers think that they have the authority. Well, they seem to have the authority. I was reading that they actually will threaten the parents. They'll say, well, we will have your children taken away because you are neglecting them medically and educationally if you do not allow your child to be put on medication. And so a lot of the parents feel that they are obligated and they are actually coerced to put the child on medication. And I see this, and of course this also happens with vaccines. They say, okay, you either get your kids vaccinated or you're not going to be able to have them attend school. I can see this happening in a very short period of time with psych drugs. They're going to say, okay, either you're going to have a mental evaluation for your child or your child will not be allowed to attend kindergarten or whatever.
Yeah, this has happened. This has happened. Wow. Parents are being coerced all the time now. And there are situations of phenomenal abuse by the school and the state and the Child Protective Services of taking children away from parents because they didn't want to put them on a psychiatric drug.
But I think it's going to be across the board. I think that there it's going to be across the board, not just isolated incidences.
Yeah, well, this is why it's important that people do fill out that form you mentioned. It's why it's important that people make it clear, they tell their school board, that they don't want any screening in the schools. I mean, people have to take action. Kids are seriously being targeted. This is the fastest growing market for the pharmaceutical industry. We've talked about this on some of your other shows. It is a concerted effort, and the marketing has been extremely effective that they've been able to, in just a matter of, you know, a decade, radically increase the number of children on psychiatric drugs. So, and these usually become then lifelong customers. You know, you start a child on an ADHD drug. These are stimulants. They're addictive. They're amphetamines, basically. Chemically, they're amphetamines. They're the same level of risk and addiction as cocaine and morphine. They're in that same category, a Schedule II controlled substance. You know, you start little kids on this. What do you think is going to happen? Of course, they're addicted. You know, you're creating lifelong customers. So, it's a very important threat for people to be aware of and to question when somebody says, wow, you know, your kid is this or that and needs to be on this drug. The other thing is I don't want to, like, neglect the fact that there are some behavioral issues with kids, and some can be extremely challenging. But the cause of it needs to be actually figured out, whether it's a nutritional allergy, whether it's, you know, an iron deficiency, whether there's sleep deprivation. There are a number of things to try to find the cause of the behavior and not sure. go for this quick labeling of, oh, ADHD, drug them with an amphetamine. So even where you have some you know, behaviors that do need attention, it's the completely wrong attention to have it go to a psychiatrist and get them on an ADHD drug.
Sure. In fact, in one of the papers that I was reading, they mentioned the overuse of antibiotics as a cause of behavioral problems. And I thought, wow, that's very interesting. I don't really believe people should be taking a lot of probably not any antibiotics, mm-hmm. Because there are other options. But so many children get ear infections. I mean, that seems to be kind of a mm-hmm. chronic thing. And so a lot of these children might be put on psychiatric drugs simply because of their responses to antibiotics that manifest themselves behaviorally.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Were you going to say something more about that?
I was going to ask you another question, but go ahead and respond to that first.
I was going to say something about actually other causes of some of the ADHD symptoms and autism is actually SSRI antidepressants. So this is, it's amazing how effective marketing is. So, both to the public and then also to doctors, you know, and general doctors and OBGYNs. So pregnant women who go to great lengths to, you know, cut caffeine and alcohol and smoking and this kind of thing are told that SSRIs are safe during pregnancy. And up to 14%, this was a New York Times just reported on this a week ago, up to 14% of pregnant women are on an antidepressant. Do you know how dangerous this is? Up to 14%. Are on an antidepressant. Now let's look at this. The reason is money, profit, greed, and destruction. That's the reason. But mm-hmm. the rationale for why these women are on these drugs, we have been told, everybody's been told, that depression is more risky during the pregnancy than the drugs. The idea being that a depressed woman isn't going to eat well, she's not going to sleep well, and that's going to lead to problems for the baby and lead to premature births. That's what everybody's been told. So then doctors, OBGYNs, believe that. So then they may be the ones prescribing, thinking, oh, well, I've read and I've been told by somebody paid by the pharmaceutical industry, but I've been told that it's worse for the woman to be depressed, so give them an antidepressant. Well, the facts, in actuality, they did this huge meta-analysis of all these births. There was three separate large meta-analyses that they published, and all of them concluded that actually women on antidepressants gave birth prematurely more often than women not on antidepressants. So they actually increase premature births, which, you know, that has its own risks that come with that. But the other thing, you know, kind of course, because these are drugs that cross the placental barrier and they go directly to the fetus, the other thing is that there are all kinds of other problems, like autism. Boys with autism, when they look at that, were 3 times more likely to have been exposed to SSRIs before birth. People with the kids with ADHD, you know, those behaviors, male or female, were twice as likely that they were exposed to to SSRIs during their pregnancy. So, and these make sense. These are, as I was saying before, the serotonin is an important neurotransmitter. It is it signals the cells in the body, not just in the brain. I mean, it's signaling cells in the body, in the heart and stomach, the lungs. You know, lung development is related to serotonin. And so it's really related to everything during development. And if you alter that, you're causing, well, what they see, you know, there's some of the more serious things is the babies born to women on SSRIs, they have an increased incidence of heart defects. And then something that's very serious that is related to the lung development, which is persistent pulmonary hypertension, which can be fatal. And at a minimum, there's also withdrawal syndrome because this does cross the placental barrier. So these babies are getting, you know, acclimated, addicted basically to the SSRIs, and then they're born and they're kind of cold turkey. They're in withdrawal syndrome.
Exactly.
With, you know, feeding problems, high-pitched screaming, you know, like withdrawing from a drug. Like no adult wants to go through that. And these babies are being put through it, you know, newborns being put through it cold turkey.
Which brings up another question that came out of the chat room.
Yes.
What about the rise of suicides amongst returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan? They are given these drugs while on duty, and then when discharged, the drugs stop. Could suicides be a manifestation of withdrawal?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That is one of the risk times. There's an increase in suicidality and actually violence during the withdrawal phase of the SSRIs. And there have been lawsuits about this, and there is actually a Department of Justice case against, I think this one was, I mean, there have been a number of Department of Justice cases against pharmaceutical companies. GlaxoSmithKline, for its psych drugs, has had to pay out, you know, billions, multi-billions. Johnson & Johnson, Janssen Pharmaceuticals, same thing. But one of them, I think it was, GlaxoSmithKline, they concealed the increased risk of violence in the withdrawal phase from Paxil. And they got busted for that because they had data showing that in the withdrawal from Paxil, there was a severe reaction and increased violence. And they hid that data. And so anyway, yes, I think the increased suicides from, you know, returning vets who have been put on the drugs, which a lot of them have. It's very bizarre because they are mind-altering, and the state of things has really changed because it used to be that you couldn't be in the military if you were on a psychiatric drug, and now they're often given bags of drugs when they're deployed. So, you know, yeah, they come back and then are in withdrawal.
Right.
So,
okay, another question. How much does TV mess up children, especially before the age of 6, in terms of well, they're, I'm not sure what this person means, but I think generally it does. I think it generally messes up everyone.
Well, TV, yeah, that's a broad thing. Let me first address it just in terms of the drug type of thing that we're talking about, that theme, and then we can look at it broader. But on one level, think about this, direct-to-consumer advertising that you know, started in the U.S. in 1997 when Congress approved that, drug ads directly to consumers. So you have kids, anybody 16 years old and under has grown up with that. And, you know, looking at, you know, kids watching TV and watching these ads are being kind of brainwashed into thinking. They hear all these ads and describing everyday problems, and then they're taught, you know, to associate those with a disorder and to associate it with a pill to fix that disorder. So
right.
That's one level to think about this, of the brainwashing going on all those commercials. What has it done, what has it done, and what will it do to kids to be having that interpretation put on everything that they might be struggling with? That's really shaped our culture since these advertising. So that's one serious mess up, because instead of it being that we have life problems and the way to solve them is you take responsibility, you confront them, you handle things in your life. You don't say, oh, it's chemical, this is entirely out of my control, I'm helpless, I have a mental disorder, I'm sick, I need a pill. That's horrible. It's so disempowering. It's horrible.
Exactly.
So that's one level. Now, the other level, just in terms of content, that's kind of the bigger issue, just about, you know, the what's going on in our society and how we're being stressed and oppressed and made to be worried about everything. You know, TV, the content makes it seem like the world is a very dangerous place, this way and that way. Everywhere you look, something terrible is happening. And it keeps people down. It keeps people constricted as they're worrying then about their own safety and how they're going to pay the mortgage because everything's collapsing. And it's just a way of controlling people. So that's my bigger answer on that. Yeah.
Indeed. The other thing, too, that I was reading Dr. Robert S. Mendelson, and I wish I had read his two books. When I was raising kids, it would have been a really just wonderful. One of his books is How to Raise Your Child in spite of your pediatrician or something. And he said that pediatricians, their bread and butter is, of course, vaccines. But the other thing that it does is that it kind of brainwashes people, parents and children, into thinking that from the very time that they're born that they need to go to the doctor, they need to go in to, first to get vaccinated, then to be weighed and made. You know, I mean, you can weigh your kid. They get all of these charts from the insurance company. But he says that, they are recruiters, that the pediatricians are recruiters for lifelong medical care from birth to death. And it gets people into thinking, children particularly, that anything that goes wrong with them, that they absolutely have to run to the doctor. And, of course, when you go to the doctor, you are going to get a prescription. But a lot of times, even with ear infections, that ear infections clear up by themselves without any external help at all, and that children just they just think they need to run to the doctor when the least little thing occurs, a cold or whatever.
Yeah, it's big business, and you know, I certainly wouldn't be advocating to go back to, you know, caveman days where you have a broken bone and there's nobody there to set it and you die from an infection, you know,
sure,
or something from the compound fracture. So we certainly need doctors, and there have been incredible advances and things that have come out of this. Yeah. Okay. So that being said, just so, you know, somebody doesn't say, oh, she's anti-doctors. That being said, yes, it has gone in this direction where we are over-intervening, and that's where we can have, you know, America, which is just 5% of the world population, how it is that Americans consume 80% of all the pharmaceuticals made in the world, And we're not the healthiest for it. America ranks 37th in world health.
Right.
That is very damning right there.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and what did we do before all of these drugs? People, you know, like let's take again, like mental and emotional struggles that people have. Psychiatric drugs, really, the very first ones came on the scene in like 1955, the first antipsychotic,
mm-hmm.
you know, for people hearing voices.
Mm-hmm.
Prozac came on in the 80s. So, 89, okay. So what did we do before that? You know, people had depression, then maybe they went and they started exercising. They went on vacation, they got outdoors. They looked at their life and thought, oh, you know what's depressing me is this job. I need to have more purpose. So then they, you know, take up some hobby where they go volunteer or they go talk to their minister or something. But
sure.
We had ways of dealing with this before that were more social. You know, you talk
right.
to a family member, you talk to friends, and we've been cut off from all that. Or the same thing, you know, what did we do before all these medical interventions? Well, we ate more healthy food. You
sure.
know, we weren't putting so many toxins in our body. It's not about trying to counterbalance one toxin with, you know, another. It's about trying to clean this up and get back to common sense. You know, just eat right, you know, and not a bunch of chemicals. That
sure.
you'll feel better, you know.
Sure.
If you're depressed, then exercise, get some good nutrition, get some sleep, talk to friends, do something for somebody else.
Exactly, yes. There's nothing
yeah.
like doing something for somebody else that puts
That's
things,
true.
Your own life in perspective.
Yeah, and we all yeah. like to help. We all like to contribute, and that is
sure.
a boost right there when you can actually help another person.
Sure.
So,
well, medicine, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Medicine is at its best when there's been an accident, and that is what Dr. Mendelsohn said, that is where you really need a doctor. But he said other than that, he actually encourages people to have their children at home, to breastfeed, to stay away, as far away from the doctor as possible. His other book was The Medical Heretic, I believe that's the name of it. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, just it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
We should be more independent. But they don't want us to be thinking independently. They want all this consensus thinking. They want herd mentality. They want us to all think alike and be alike. No independence or any entrepreneurial thoughts whatsoever. They want to herd us
yeah.
all into the same corral.
Yeah, yeah, and the more people are sick, I mean, one, there's a lot of profit and money in that for the people
sure.
who are in those businesses, but again, the more people are sick, their thinking is kind of constricted. When you're sick, you're just worried about your body. You're not thinking about any higher purpose, you're not thinking spiritually, you're not thinking, you know, you're just worried about your body. So it
sure.
really compresses, like, constricts a person and their reach in the world and their thinking and their ability, everything. So,
right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to the quick facts about psychiatry. I mean, once in a while I wake up in the middle of the night and I have my iPad right next to my bed and I just open that up and, I mean, I could wake up like at, I don't know, 3 o'clock or whatever. And I've read all of these booklets, and it's just
mm-hmm.
amazing. I'm just loving it. They have, under CCH Publications, we are talking major amounts of facts, and it talks
mm-hmm.
about brain scans and side effects, and it just goes on, and it's just so many resources that people need to know about.
Yeah,
I just can't say enough
yeah.
about CCHR. I'm just astounded by the efforts that they have made to educate people, and more people need to know these things because, as you mentioned, all of the things that we see on TV are designed to, well, to brainwash us, it's all marketing. In fact, the pharmaceutical companies spend more on marketing than they do on research and development. In fact, they don't really develop anything. They rebrand a lot of the things that they used before. They just rename them, or they change the formula just a little bit because it's all about marketing. They come out with a new product, which is, in fact, the very same old product that they've made into a pink tablet instead of a gray tablet or some other color.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's true. Yeah, that is true. I read this one former head of Eli Lilly in Sweden. He wrote a book.
Oh, yes,
expose.
I love that book.
Yeah, right. You read that, Side Effects of Death.
Yeah.
By John Virapen. And, you know, he exposes everything. It's kind of part confessional and part expose. And he really wrote it, I think, to kind of clear his conscience.
I do, too. He felt guilty.
Yeah.
He, and he has a seven-year-old.
Right. That he didn't want to fall victim to the psychiatric drug marketing that he had participated in. And he was haunted by some of the suicides in the clinical trials, the Eli Lilly clinical trials of Prozac, which were concealed because they knew that it increased suicides. They knew this, but they concealed it. No, I forget the point I was going to make about him. talking about the marketing tools used and what they do. He said in that book even that some of the money that is given to doctors, you know, pay them out and pay them to give, you know, write more prescriptions for a particular drug, that some of that, there's ways that they finagle and categorize that under research and development. So it's probably even less money that goes into research and development actually. Because they're all about it. They're not a public service. They're really not a public service. They're for profit, and they have a very, very effective system going right now. So there's no reason for them to spend money on trying to find something else when they can. They're so successful in selling the drugs they have and the use of all these marketing things and making people think that they're sick, and that's one of the best kinds of marketing is to take healthy people or people who have, you know, a minor struggle or a medium struggle and make them think it is much worse and that it is an illness that needs a drug. Because then you're really reaching the whole population. Why are you going to develop some drug for some rare illness when you can market a drug in such a way that you can get everybody taking it whether they really had an illness or not? I mean, the goal is selling the drug.
Are you there? What happened? Whoops. I think we've lost.
Can you?
Okay.
Really?
What happened?
I can hear you. You can't hear me anymore?
I can hear you now. But for a minute you just kind of left.
It must be. I will have to do a landline next time, I think. But, I was hearing you the whole time.
You mentioned, did you want to finish your thought? I hate to interrupt, but we both have so many things to talk about.
Well, I'm not sure which part cut out. So I just did want to make the
point.
You
were just gone for a couple of seconds.
Oh, okay. So you get the idea. But it's most effective to spend money on marketing because you can market in such a way, which they have done now. They've figured out how to do it so that you can really reach the whole population, not just some little niche, you know, that's got a particular real illness.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned that some of the lawsuits, they had to pay out millions and millions of dollars, but they just count. They make billions of dollars. They make billions and billions of dollars. This is just a drop in the bucket, and they just chalk it up to doing business.
This is absolutely true, and one of those that really shows that is even the largest settlement that ever happened was the three billion. $3 billion, $3 billion settlement with the Department of Justice with GlaxoSmithKline paid $3 billion in criminal and civil fines for the tools, the way that they marketed to their antidepressants, Paxil and Wellbutrin, and for falsifying data and getting it published in a journal, and paying a psychiatrist to put his name on it and publish it in a psychiatric journal. So all those kinds of things that we know that happen. Anyway, they got busted. They paid $3 billion in 2012. Okay. So
and who did they put in jail?
Nobody. And that's the thing. Nobody. Nobody went to jail. And, you know, people die from these drugs because of the effects on the health. That's one thing we don't touch on that often. We talk about, you know, the suicide and the violence, which certainly there are deaths from that. But the health consequences, these drugs affect the liver. They cause can cause obesity. They cause diabetes. There's all kinds of problems that happen. So you would think that this was advertised, it was, you know, put in the news as like the largest drug company payout. So $3 billion GlaxoSmithKline. Well, the following year, they were doing the same thing. It was not a deterrent. That was not a deterrent. $3 billion was not a deterrent because they got busted again, and then they had to pay out. This time it was only a matter of millions. I can't remember what it was, but to settle some lawsuits in multiple states, including the District of Columbia, for the exact same thing. So this is just the way they operate. They're still operating this way. All of the drug companies are still operating this way. They pay psychiatrists to give continuing education seminars to doctors where they're touting a certain drug, but in a subtle way so that, you know, people who are attending the seminar don't realize it's a marketing thing. They publish journal articles that are written by the pharmaceutical companies. The corruption of knowledge, the corruption of data has made those psychiatric journals just meaningless. But unfortunately, most doctors and the public don't know that, and they still read those, and it's used to, you know, make treatment protocols. People read these journal articles, and they think, oh, wow, look at this. Prozac was so much more effective than, you know, everything else. So now that's what we're going to prescribe. And they have no idea that what they just read was a complete lie. But people's lives are being affected by this. And you just can't – the journals now are entirely corrupted. Actually, what's her name? She was she was head of something. She was – oh, the New England Journal of Medicine. It's one of the most respected journals, medical journals.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, she was a 20-year editor of that, chief editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me. I can't remember her name right now.
Marsh,
she came out. Oh, yeah, yeah. She came out with a statement saying that, you know, she came to it over time and it was a difficult conclusion to come to, but that basically she was saying that the data, you just can't believe the stuff in these studies anymore.
Right.
You've
read
about her?
Yeah, she wrote a book. I'll send you the title of it. Yeah, she wrote a book about that, about the medical industry, and really nails them really well. Another comment from the chat room that's relevant to TV, and something that I talked about in the book that I'm currently writing. He says, the reason the American people are so trustworthy of their local doctor is they have been brainwashed over the 60 to 70 years by the television shows, like Ben Casey, Dr. Kildare, Marcus Welby, that name is, in the 60s, and ER in later decades. He says, turn off the TV, folks. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
but
really
is
interesting.
That programming?
Is that what?
That is really programming.
Yeah, definitely. I hadn't thought about that all those shows, but that's completely true. Yeah. So, and then it's a very nice setup to then have all the direct-to-consumer advertising that says, ask your doctor, because everybody's already been primed by all these good doctors, these kindly doctors that, you know, help
they
everybody.
They know it all. They know everything.
They know it all.
Wise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's funny. I remember reading one time an interview with, what was the actor who played Marcus Welby? Can't remember his name right now.
I don't know, because I got rid of my TV when I think he was on. When my kids were little, we just thought, oh, we're kind of using the TV to babysit them.
Yeah.
And so we got rid of it, and, they played more together. They were, they took piano lessons at the library. We just had a lot of fun, but for the first 3 weeks, honest to Pete, it was really difficult. Because I realized how much I had depended on the TV to occupy them in busy times, preparing dinner and whatnot. Then it was just kind of easy to just sit them in front of the television. But
Well, good for you. You got rid of it. I remember this interview with Marcus, the guy who played Marcus Welby,
Robert,
he was saying
Robert something.
I can't remember now, actually. But he said people, that the show was so convincing or whatever, that people would approach him actually asking him medical things, actually treating him as if he were a doctor. That's really something. So
that
speaks
well for programming. Robert Young.
Yes,
Robert Ron.
Oh, yeah, Robert
Young.
Yeah.
I knew somebody in the chat room would come forth with information.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
Oh goodness. I as I mentioned, I'm writing a book, and I've told you privately that I'm writing a book, and one of the chapters, and this came from somebody in the chat room. One of my chapters is entitled, it's just preliminary thinking, is ask your doctor if suicide is right for you.
Oh.
And I'm kind of deliberating because I don't want to, with all the people who have relatives who have committed suicide, I don't want to inflict any additional pain. But if the commercials actually were honest, if the marketers were actually honest, that is what they would be saying. Ask your doctor if suicide is right for you, because if you take this medication, you might have suicide ideation.
Right.
But
yeah. Well, I think it's a powerful chapter title, and I definitely understand and appreciate your sensitivity thinking to the people who have lost loved ones by suicide. Somebody who has and has recognize the role of the SSRI antidepressants in that suicide may appreciate how hard hitting that is, and that it just cuts past the marketing and uses it back on itself. But that is true, and that's the thing that people are not warned about. They rarely get true informed consent. It's brushed over, minimized. And they rarely get the real facts on this, because if they did, there would not nearly be the number of people on these drugs. I mean, it's just without question. If people were really informed, you may get a small percentage that would say, it's worth it for me to try it because it's so horrible. But people are on these drugs now because of the marketing and the TV commercials for just garden variety depression.
Sure.
Loss of a job or a divorce or something or just something not going right and they're feeling down, and it's treated as if it's harmless. People say, maybe you should try, Prozac or Celexa, Paxil,
sure,
any one of these. And they do.
And the thing about what is that when one medication, and you're always going to feel wonderful the minute you start taking this medication, because they are stimulants, and they make you feel up. But the problem is, and I was reading it in one of the papers, a 17-year-old, I believe he was either 15 or 17, and he thought, okay, I am going to try what was it that he was on? Ritalin. Okay, he was going to try Ritalin because the school had said, this is good, you should try it because you're hyperactive. And he said at first he felt wonderful, he was all hyped up, and he was talkative, and it was just wonderful. And then after a few hours, then he became angry, he got into a fight with his mother, and then the next feeling that he had, he felt like he wanted to kill her. And then the next day, after taking just one Ritalin, the next day, he felt suicidal and didn't want to live. That's from one pill.
Yeah.
One pill.
Yeah, these are... Well, go ahead.
The other thing that I read, this one is just so awful. One of the papers was talking about the restraint and isolation that they put some of these children in, and that... when they go into a hospital or a mental care facility, and there are children that actually perish from 6-year-olds, 9-year-olds that are strapped into a wheelchair. He's 6 years old, strapped to a wheelchair, and put in isolation, and he died of asphyxiation. Honest to Pete, I was reading through this paper, a CCHR paper. And tears were just streaming down my face because of all these deaths.
Yeah, I totally understand. It's extremely painful to look at the reality of what's going on, and when you see actual little children, actual lives, actual families that are destroyed by this. And this is one of the things of how this can go on, is because so many people actually can't face the tears that come with looking at the reality. So it's it takes a lot to be able to actually face it. And then you can do something about, like, you're writing a book. You have the radio show. You've actually faced it, and then you're doing something. And people that are listening can do something. They can spread the word. They can tell their neighbors. They can not let their kids be put on psychiatric drugs.
The other thing, too, is, and you've mentioned this before, the little kids that have been put on these drugs. Now, these also act as a lobotomy. They lobotomize or diminish the brain cells in the frontal lobe so that you actually, it's like having a chemical lobotomy. And when you're talking about putting toddlers on these drugs, I don't know how parents can do this. I know that parents are very busy. A lot of times the mothers work outside of the home, and they go to their doctor, and they say, oh, my little kid is so rambunctious. And they buy into it, and they don't know what they're doing. And this is permanent damage. This is not something that you're going to get over. When your brain matter shrinks, it's going to stay shrunk. It's not going to grow back.
Yeah, there's... there are permanent damages that happen from these, and it's, the number of kids on them is extremely troubling and worrying to know what's going to happen later with these kids. Because, as I said, the serotonin is a very important neurotransmitter, and it affects all kinds of functions and all parts of our body. So you give that to a developing kid. A lot of these psychiatric drugs, they do shrink brain tissue, and I think all of them are affecting the frontal lobe, and they do disconnect, they disable parts of the frontal lobe. That's part of how they work, part of how
one of the disconnecting from that, you disconnect feelings of connection with others. This is also one of the reasons people commit suicide, is that they get disconnected from their feelings towards other people, so that they're more isolated, feeling more isolated emotionally, which is the worst. That's the last thing you want when you're depressed, because depression already creates some feeling of isolation. But on the the SSRI antidepressants and the atypical antipsychotics that are frequently now, very, very frequently now, prescribed in conjunction with the antidepressants. You know, the atypical antipsychotics like Abilify, Seroquel, Geodon, I don't know, Zyprexa, a bunch of these. They're very dangerous, these drugs.
Exactly.
But they just cut people off from others and the social feeling, the love feelings for others. And it exacerbates the depression and homicide, because the
right.
increase in the aggressive feelings and hostility. If you're disconnected from everybody, and you've damaged your judgment and you've increased impulsivity and all that, it goes into violence. One of the things I want to mention to people, because a lot of times people think that because the drug's on the market, it's really been tested well. First of all, we do know, and more has come out about this, different whistleblowers, that the studies have been manipulated and falsified data. But even with that, none of these antidepressants have been studied for longer than, 6 weeks, I think, is the...
Right,
I don't have it right in front of me. But the clinical trials are ridiculously short. People assume that it was studied for a year before it was put on the market. That is not true. They're usually, around 6 weeks. And with Prozac, the first one of the SSRI antidepressants, in the clinical trial itself, 25%, I'm looking at right now, in the four pivotal trials for Prozac that were used to get the FDA approval, so these are the ones they got approval from these trials, 25% of the subjects in those trials had to be given a benzodiazepine tranquilizer to calm the agitation and akathisia and anxiety and mania caused by the Prozac. Now, the akathisia, just so people know what that means, that's a severe inner agitation and restlessness and feeling that you cannot get away from. Even if you go, sprint around the block, you won't get rid of that feeling. It's a severe inner agitation. It's one of the things that drives people to suicide and violence.
Right.
But anyway, in the clinical trial, and they were allowed to do this, they actually had to, people had such adverse reactions to Prozac, they had to drug them. They had to give them a tranquilizer to continue just that 6-week trial.
Mm-hmm. And that was after they washed out a lot of people who were suicidal.
Yes. Some of these trials are just ridiculous how they can manipulate them and that there aren't more safeguards in place. But that's because there's such a fluidity between the, FDA and the pharmaceutical companies as people that are employed by one and then they go work for the other. Mm-hmm. One of these that I was reading about, they took anybody, they started the trial, and anybody in the placebo group that was given the sugar pill, anybody in that group that had a positive reaction to the placebo, they removed from the study. Then in the drug group, anybody that was having an adverse reaction, they removed from the study and after the first week, and then they continued the study with the leftover people. So they completely rig it to try to maximize and make it seem like there's a positive effect.
Exactly. They just stack these studies and then they lie about them, and then they just take out the two. I think there's four formal studies that they're supposed to do, or maybe five, but they will accept just two of those studies. And what the drug company does is they mix those studies so that they get two that might look good enough to pass, and they don't tell them, well, we actually fudged because we gave what did you call it, the
benzodiazepine. Benzodiazepine. That's like, you know, yeah, the tranquilizer.
Yeah, people aren't going to take those in normal life. And also in a study,
right,
people sign up for these studies feeling hopeful, and so that they're not likely to commit suicide because they're feeling, oh, boy, there's something that is actually going to help me, and then they start feeling suicidal. A lot of people just dropped out of the study. But for them to feel suicidal after they've just felt hopeful is really significant also.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yes, this is, you know, again, like you think of some of these people who kill themselves where everybody's shocked because they weren't. They weren't suicidal. They weren't, there wasn't something they had ever thought about.
Robin Williams.
Yeah, Robin Williams. And there have been people who, family reports they weren't at all suicidal, but then you also have people who didn't commit suicide, but who have written things and report how they had such compulsive, like it was like a compulsion. The suicidal feelings were so strong. Now they managed not to, but lived to write about it to try to warn others.
Sure.
So, you know, these things, in terms of effectiveness, because sometimes people say, well, but then they probably are saving all these other people. And they're not. There was a huge meta-analysis done. This is where you go over all the study. You do a study of all the studies. So they looked at studies done from 1987 to 1999 and found that 80% of the, you know, quote, positive response to the medication was actually placebo. It was because of placebo, where people have that hopefulness and they think, oh, I'm getting this new drug that's going to really help. Placebo effect is a phenomenal thing and has such positive implications for our own ability to make a decision and change our condition. You know, that when we think, we make a decision to say, I'm going to feel better. They make themselves feel better. It's not the sugar pill, obviously. It's that they told themselves, I'm going to feel better. And then they did. So now the significance of this, so 80% of that, and this is of the studies that were given to the FDA. So you know that they were also manipulated in there, that anything positive was probably false to start with. But 80% was they were able to duplicate with a placebo group. So now the difference with placebo is it's not toxic. You're not doing all of the many, many damaging things that we know now come from the SSRIs, you know, from, you know, diabetes and metabolic syndrome to now what I just read, the dental implant failure because you've got, you're ruining the bones, you know, increased bone fractures, to all the mental and emotional complications. You know, a placebo, what would be great is for people to really realize that they can fix their own condition. We've been brainwashed by decades of TV commercials and this whole industry telling us that we're helpless, that things are out of our control, that it's chemical, which is a lie, that it's genetic, that it's all this stuff that is complete lie. But we've been bombarded with this message that we're helplessness out of our control. What if we just switch it over and actually realize the truth that it's entirely in our control? And that's what is proven by the placebo effect. And there are incredible studies on the placebo effect, not just these drug trials where you have people that get better on the sugar pill. But I'm talking, there are placebo studies done even on surgery. There was one that I read arthroscopic surgery for osteoarthritis of the knee. And so they did what's called a placebo surgery, where they do an incision, and then they do all the sounds that would go along with the surgery, but they don't insert anything into the knee. And do you know the patients with the osteoarthritis of the knee that had the placebo surgery did better than the patients who actually had the arthroscopic surgery?
Wow.
So placebo, that is a person decides, my knee is going to be better, I'm going to have less pain, I'm going to have more mobility, you know, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually have that effect on their body.
Wow.
And so, you know, you don't have to, I mean, that's on the extreme, like with something that we're talking about, even surgery, and
right.
the placebo was better.
Yeah.
Even when people know it's a placebo, because the other thing, sometimes people think you have to be tricked into a placebo for it to work.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was one study done with people with irritable bowel syndrome, and they actually told the people, listen, we're going to give you a placebo, but because of the mind-body connection, some people get better with the placebo.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when they were told that, whatever percentage, but a statistically significant number, still got better,
mm-hmm.
even though they knew they were taking a placebo. So,
wow.
Yeah. So when we
Amazing.
Really acknowledge and know and, you know, kind of, to use that phrase, you know, own our own ability, we can do amazing things. And
right.
I would love to see, you know, more people move in that direction. It's,
sure.
You know, the contrast to this is a thing called the nocebo effect. And that's a real thing. That's where people have the adverse reactions when they're expecting to. You know, like if somebody is given a drug and they're told, okay, this will take care of your depression, but it might create a dry mouth. People on the placebo can experience both of those things. They can get better, feel less depressed, and they can get a dry mouth because they are expecting to.
Sure.
So the nocebo effect, think about this, of the entire kind of psychiatric industry, starting with that diagnostic and statistical manual that
is terrible.
Everybody. It's so unprofessional, it's so unscientific, but unprofessional. It's if anybody looks at that, well, you know it from commercials. Like, all you have to do is have like a third grade, fourth grade reading level, and you too can diagnose anybody. It's
mm-hmm.
that's what shows how unscientific it is. All you need to do is recognize a list of observable behaviors, and you have made a medical psychiatric diagnosis.
Right.
Any kid could do it, you know. So obviously there's no blood test, there's no, you know, labs, there's nothing that shows any of these because they're not true illnesses, they're not diseases, they're not disorders. But anyway, take that book that has gotten broader and broader and you know, made more and more things pathological to sell more and more drugs. And that is a giant nocebo effect on our society, on everybody. Every time anybody looks at a commercial, it's the nocebo effect. It's telling them, you're sick, you're sick, you're sick, you need a pill. And it makes people be that way,
right.
You know, and it makes them not handle their own life. They don't think they can. They're helpless. It's like, I can't do anything. It's like, you know, my depression.
Right.
And I don't want to minimize depression because I mean, I have 23 years in private practice, and I know what how people can suffer. I also know from 23 years in practice that how people can get out of that when they feel in control, and
right.
and it's the opposite. It's where you've got empowering. You know, it's in your control. You can change this, that. You can. You know,
or even when something isn't in, I have been to a psychologist twice, no,
mm-hmm.
three times. Once mm-hmm. after I was divorced, well, I went maybe three visits, and
yeah.
I never, you know, a psychologist, they talk to you, and
yeah, it's talk
and you can talk it mm-hmm. out, and you can get all of that anger and the feelings of, well, just all the feelings that you might have. You can talk about it with somebody that's objective and can help you work through it. And and even if you cannot change the situation that made you feel bad, you can change the way that you feel about the situation. And they do give you the ability to feel like, okay, this has nothing to do with me or my worth. It just empowers you. So I really do believe in people that offer talk therapy, compassionate talk therapy, and I'll bet that you did that for 23 years. And and bless your heart. Bless your heart for doing
that. Thank you. Yeah, I did for 23 years. And part of, you know, why I stopped was because of seeing how many people were not getting better or were getting worse because they were also then seeing a psychiatrist or they already came in on a psychiatric drug when they came to see me. And seeing the help that they got by getting off of that and how much better they did and how they then would tell me, like, oh, my God, I had no idea how much that was affecting me. And
they think it's a disease.
Yeah, that's right. They do. And this was before I did all of the, you know, research that I really got into extensively. But just from my own experience with people of seeing and kind of adding it up, it's like, wow, the people that are doing the worst, they got worse on these drugs. They got better getting off of them. And I closed my practice because I felt I really recognized how large of a societal problem this is. And it wasn't enough for me to just be dealing with one person at a time in my office. I felt I have to get the word out to more people quicker because the drug companies are working extremely quickly and, you know, broadening the markets, changing, you know, the diagnostic and statistical manual. With one small change, they add many more patients, you know, customers, the going after kids, all of this. You know, they're on Capitol Hill. They get a piece of legislation passed for some mental health screening thing. I mean, they are really, they have strategy. It's like they've got a battle plan. Like, they know what they're doing.
Sure.
And it's so I'm, like, trying to do as much as I can, as quick as I can, because there are people, as you saw when you were reading some of that, people that are dying, kids that are dying. There are phenomenal abuses in the psychiatric field right now, just unspeakable abuses. Yeah.
Well, we've talked a lot about Prozac, and when just before the Prozac expired, because they had a 20-year license. It came out in January of 89, and the license expired in 2001, I believe. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I'm not sure.
Their patent,
Yes, their patent expired. And then they offered it. I mean, there's like 75 generic versions of Prozac. But anyway, then they came out with what they call another blockbuster, and that's Zyprexia. And the one thing about Zyprexia is that it causes people to have diabetes. And so Eli Lilly also is one of the biggest manufacturers of medications for diabetes.
Win-win. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah. And think of all the diabetics that have to go on dialysis. Don't you have to do that sometimes because your kidneys fail when you have do your kidneys fail because it cannot handle all of the SSRI drugs?
The drugs? I don't know. It's not something that I know, so I can't answer that.
But
that's a good question, though.
Yeah. And the liver. Okay,
I mean, all
I know
the drugs
the liver.
Affect the liver. They affect the liver. They affect kidneys and liver, the psychiatric drugs. But I don't know in terms of this and dialysis what might be what. Yeah.
But there's a lot of liver failure and liver transplants as a result of SSRI drugs.
Yes. Yeah, we usually focus on the psychiatric effects of these drugs, but there are many, many, there's lots of serious medical harm that's done by the drugs, and that's some of it, is the liver damage.
So, yeah. Well, that's I hadn't put those two together about Eli Lilly, you know, making the Zyprexa and making the diabetes med.
I mean, you're just, it's a win-win situation, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an out-of-control force right now, and I think it's the most powerful, the psychiatric and pharmaceutical alliance is the most powerful force affecting our culture right now in so many ways that, people are aware of, not aware of. Certainly the drugs and the damage from the drugs, but they're kind of everywhere now. They're everywhere. It's in our schools, in our homes. It's affected how people look at themselves. It's the whole industry has also taken over the role of friends and support network and people's spiritual that whether it's their minister or priest or whoever. People used to go talk to, a spiritual leader.
Right.
When they had problems. Or their neighbors and their family. But that, we've gotten kind of brainwashed into this idea of the expert. And so people don't do the common sense things that they used to do, like, talk to a friend. They think they have to have an expert, this authority. But people did fine in this regard, did much better prior to psychiatric drugs.
People
handled their lives. And we didn't have the problems we have now. It would be one thing if we were looking at this, at society and saying, since the introduction of Prozac and there's never been depression. There's never been a case of depression anymore. It's gone.
Right. And yet we have more.
We have way more. We have way more. We have suicides. We have weird violence. We have people that are disconnected. We have children that are having more problems. It's like, it's just horrible, horrible damage, destruction. Yeah. We have increased disability rates on for mental illness. People, more and more people. And not just numbers, but I mean the rate, so per population number. So the rate of disability is up and up and up. These psychiatric drugs, every one of them disables. Every one of them disables. These drugs were never studied for any length of time. And even the short amount of time they were studied, they knew very well that they were destructive. But none of them were studied to be given for lengths of times that they are now. People are put on these drugs indefinitely.
Right.
And they're just ruining people.
And yet you hear people say, and I'm talking about intelligent people, will say, well, we just need more mental health help. We need more focus on mental health. When in fact we need less. We need to get the drugs out of the schools, out of the nursing homes, out of the military. That is the problem. Is that the drugs are the problem?
They completely are, and that's the thing. I'm glad you brought up the military also, and that's one of the things that documentary is on the CCHRINT website. So there's two websites I think you mentioned, but CCHR.org, that stands for Citizens Commission on Human Rights. And then CCHRINT.org, and that stands for the Citizens Commission on Human Rights International. And I'm a commissioner for them, which is like an advisor for CCHR. But on the CCHRINT.org website, they can see the documentary. It's called The Hidden Enemy. And it is true. I don't remember the exact wording, but it's the most dangerous enemy is the one you never suspect. And that's what's going on in the military right now. Psychiatry has infiltrated the military, and it is not suspected that this, quote, help is actually the enemy and is what is destroying the military. And our soldiers, veterans that are being given more and more psychiatric drugs, massive influx of psychiatric drugs. From 2005 to 2011, there was a 682% increase in psychiatric drugs in the military. Massive influx.
of psychiatry in the military. That was a 30 times higher increase in drugs than in the civilian population.
Right.
And with that, there's been, you know, sudden death. This is, again, back to just medical. Sudden death from, Seroquel is one of them. Seroquel especially, but that's one of those atypical antipsychotics. Just, you know, healthy young people where their heart just stops because it's as taking it as prescribed because it is a like tranquilizes to an extent that it will actually stop the heart when they're sleeping. But all the deaths, the suicides, the violent, you know, killing sprees, all kinds of damage that came from that. So, I mean, I hope people, like, will check that documentary out. You can watch it for free on the website. You can also buy it, of course. And then on that website, there's also a petition. If you agree, you know, I'd encourage you to sign that petition. It's calling for a congressional investigation into the psychiatric drugs and the suicides and sudden death in the military, which is just keeps climbing. It, you know, something the co-founder, again, of CCHR, Dr. Thomas Zaz, he's, you know, he recently, like a year ago or so, passed away, but he was a lifelong, I mean, he's a psychiatrist and the conscience and a critic of psychiatry. And he said, we don't have an epidemic of mental illness. We have an epidemic of psychiatry.
Yes.
And that is so true. It's like, you know, it's not that we, you know, had some big epidemic and all of a sudden, you know, an epidemic of children with some weird symptoms and, you know, that needed a drug to fix it. You know, it's, we have an epidemic of psychiatry that is labeling everything as a disorder and then drugging it and causing massive destruction to people, both directly and then all the indirect and collateral damage that's done. The damage done to our military is criminal. I mean, all of it is, the damage done to children, but it's just horrific to see the pain and destruction caused in military families by psychiatric drugs.
Right.
You know, they caused an increase in child abuse in the military families. There was a 40% increase in child abuse in military families the year after this the drugs really started in climbing in earnest. Yeah.
Wow. Now, the name of the film is The Hidden Enemy Inside Psychiatry's Covert Agenda, The Military, Psychiatry's Ultimate Testing Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're really running a clinical study on the population, particularly the military population.
Well, psychiatry's done that with the military for many years. For decades.
Right.
And I know some people are aware now of things like the LSD experiments that were done where soldiers were not told that they were being given something and they were given LSD experiments on. The military's been experimented on by psychiatry for decades and intentionally because it's a group that, you know, has to follow orders. It's a controlled, it's a closed group so you can, you know, observe them. It's like kind of a good clinical trial because it's a closed group. It's time that the military, which is I've talked to many people in there. They've got deep concern about the suicides. There's a lot of pain around that, and a lot of feeling of responsibility and trying to solve it. And they keep looking for why is this happening? Why is this happening? And I have read actually all of the military, the different branches of the military and the overall, their suicide prevention programs. And some of them, like the information, they are very good. They're very thoughtfully done. But again, it's the hidden enemy. What they are not considering is that psychiatry in there and the drugs are causing the problem. So they can come up with very thoughtful things about trying to, you know, increased resilience and all these things. Like I said, like a lot of stuff is really good. I read it and I thought, wow, these are some smart, thoughtful people. And they really care. And it's like criminal that they don't know they're being betrayed. They're being betrayed by psychiatry. And even their, you know, some of the psychiatrists within there, I mean, even they are being betrayed. I'm not, like the military psychiatrists, those are not the bad guys.
they're right. being betrayed by the industry, that the journals that they're reading, the studies that they're counting on. Because I read one of these military programs, and what they did was they really looked at all of the studies in the journals, the published studies, what's mm-hmm. considered, you know, peer-reviewed and is supposed to be science. They mm-hmm. looked at all those, and they took the best information out of them, and really kind of a thorough, conscientious effort. But you know what? If the data is false, then it doesn't matter. And they're being betrayed. They don't know that the data is false. So it's like doing a battle plan, you know, and if you've got this, you know.
You're missing part of the puzzle.
Yeah, or you're given false intel about what's going on the ground, and then you form your battle plan based on that data, you're going to have casualties, and that's what's going on. They're having terrible casualties, and they don't know what's going on. They don't know why, because they've got a good program. They're trying good things, and they get more and more military keep killing themselves. But, right. you know, you put a drug in somebody that causes the kinds of reactions that these drugs cause, and they're going to kill themselves.
Sure.
You know, you disconnect them from their loved ones because, you know, they're cut off from their feelings and feeling of reality. You impair their judgment. You increase impulsivity, increase irritability, hostility, give them suicidal ideation, give them some homicidal ideation. And, you know, what do you expect?
Sure.
It's like, it's just a recipe.
Now, the first use of psychiatric drugs in the military was to get them over the stigma of killing other people, to get them over this taboo that they should not kill other people. And so that is why they introduced psychiatric drugs into the military to begin with, so that they would get over that.
Yeah. That, and that's where you said, you know, kind of the using them to experiment and how to make kind of a, you know, a killing machine. And then this is the other thing where we know, and it's well documented, that psychiatry used the military for this way, and exactly what you're saying, trying to see how you could get somebody to kill. So we know that. And then how is it that in the civilian population, when people are on these same psychiatric drugs and they go on killing sprees, people say, oh, no, it's not the drug. You know, it's like they did this specific. They know that it causes this. That's why it's been used in militaries actually internationally. Some of these drugs have been used in militaries to get people to kill and to kill without concern for themselves, you know, like kamikaze.
Sure.
It's like these drugs, the kamikaze were also drugged with some of these psychiatric drugs. So they know that it does this, and it's done on purpose. And then in the civilian population, when we see the same thing, where somebody goes and does some weird killing spree and even kills himself because they don't care, and then people say, oh, well, that, you know, it's not the drugs, it's because they had a mental illness. Like, these people, any of them who've done any of these weird killing sprees, every one of them, I never, ever heard in the news that they were in treatment because they had these weird, you know, they were homicidal. They went into treatment because of some other benign thing that is the usual reasons that people get referred and somebody says, oh, you should go talk to somebody, and then they end up on the psych drug. They weren't, you know, they didn't go into treatment because they had uncontrollable homicidal thoughts, you know?
Right.
It's the drugs that cause that.
I have another question that's very interesting, I think. Well, all of the questions have been very interesting. Do you think that these psych drugs are being given to our police departments? Speaking of killing other people.
You know, I don't know. I don't have any research on that, if they're being given like a concerted effort. Like the military, I do. I have the data, and I know that they are being targeted. I don't know if our police are being targeted. Certainly, you're going to have a number of police officers on psychiatric drugs as you do in the general population. We have now in this country 1 in 4 Americans on a psychiatric drug. So they're going to be.
And we
officers.
All know somebody on them.
That's right. Well, 1 in 4. This is, again, where, like, we've been asleep. And, you know, it's gotten this bad that you could have 1 in 4 people on a psychiatric drug. It's like, we got to clean this up quickly because this is, and I do believe we can. I mean, I really do. That's why I do what I do, and I hope that others will spread the word. There's like a net that is forming, and it's getting more and more connections as more people talk to more people, talk to more people, and pretty soon that's going to weave all together, and we're going to be protected from this.
Right.
It started out, it was like, you know, one dot here and one dot there, lonely voices, you know, but it's getting stronger, and we're going to be able to turn this around. But we do have to do it. We have to turn this around. 1 in 4 on a psych drug. So that question, I mean, you know, 1 in 4 in the population is on a psych drug. So they're going to be, but I don't know if it's a targeted group yet.
Yes.
I'd be curious if that person has any data about that, if they know of anything, or if they have a reason for that question of wondering if the police are being targeted
question.
For it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of reading through some of the comments here.
Yeah, sure.
I love
your listeners. I really love the chat room and the question. I should have, I'm not on my computer right now to participate, but I'm glad you're reading them and bringing them to us.
Yes, let me look and see if anybody's called, and let me check my email to see if anybody's emailed me a question.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes
yeah.
I get so intent on the conversation with the guests that I forget to check
yeah,
the
yeah.
to see if somebody's called.
Yeah. I mean, unless you got a call there, thing. I mean, I was going to just say that, you know, every facet right now is being affected by psych drugs, and it's. I just think we do have to turn it around. Because it's, you know,
yeah.
schools, court system, just there's no place you can look. Our government, our, you know, now we have, you know, this health care that
and Medicare.
All of this has massive psychiatric influence. Medicare foster children, this is a huge area that gotten a lot of attention over the last several years. The abuse is going on there, the kids that are being given, like, you know, so many psychiatric drugs. But it's all money, and it's all, you know, at a minimum it's money and profit and greed. But there are evil people, and they are few. Most people are very good. But those few that are evil have
a lot of power and a lot of money.
They have a lot of power and a lot of money, and unfortunately they have many others who don't see what's going on doing their bidding for them because they're unaware.
Right.
You know, so they got their minions that are unaware. But
you know, in addition to children in the foster care system, there's also the prison population. And
right.
Somebody in the chat room mentioned road rage. We never used to hear about road rage.
Oh, yeah. 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 So, that exactly. That's another thing. You know, again, like I don't know the numbers, but specific incidents of road rage and which were on psychiatric drugs. I don't know that anybody studied that. But again, when you look at 1 in 4 Americans on a psych drug, and you know that psych drugs cause agitation, hostility, irritability, impulse control problems, all of that, judgment impaired. Again, those are all factors of road rage.
Sure.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
There was an article in the newspaper probably 3 months ago about this person here in Chicago that beat up a woman that he saw on the street. She was with her daughter, and he just almost beat her to death. And he gave the reason for beating her is because she just seemed too happy. And so I contacted the reporter that did the story and asked him what drug this person was on, and he responded right away. He said that he didn't attend court, so he wasn't sure what drug and if he was on a drug, but I just can't imagine that he wasn't. I mean, imagine beating up somebody that looked happy. and he just couldn't handle that.
That's really reminds me of this veteran who came back, published his story. Was his last name something like Wieslowski? I don't have it in front of me, but he said that he had very intense homicidal fantasies about this woman he met in a bar who was very happy, seemed happy, and he was actually fantasizing about killing her, and he had never had anything like this before, and he kind of was able to realize it was the psychiatric drugs, and he got off the drugs, and then went away, and, you know, he didn't end up one of these statistics who, you know, kills somebody for some, you know, just no reason, but it was kind of similar. He said it was just, she was happy, and he just was fantasizing about killing her.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, what's these people who manage to withstand those impulses and then have the presence of mind to know that it's the psychiatric drugs and get off them, and then do a good service for everybody else by writing their story up and letting people know that this can happen,
Are,
I really respect. Yeah.
Most of the time, they are told that these feelings that they have while they're on psychiatric drugs are a result of the disease. And so then they may add something else. And they may add have a cocktail of these drugs.
Yeah. That's exactly what happens. And that was, actually, I just found this on this guy. It's Kyle Wieslowski. He was a U.S. Army specialist. He had been in Iraq in 2010. He's written about this because they made him homicidal.
Okay. We do have a caller.
Hello.
We have a caller. Okay, 708. Go ahead.
Hi, Deanna. I know
Hi.
Time is short, so you're the good doctor asked me if I had any new information about the cops being on the psycho drugs. I do not. However, I do know they're on steroids. And I think that there might be a link. I'm not sure, but when you see a cop over the age of 30 who is bulked up beyond belief with no neck, you know they're on steroids. And I have another friend who's a fireman who has cop friends and stuff like that. So, because it's physiologically impossible for a male over the age of 30 to have this bulk of incredible size. It's just impossible. So they are on steroids, and I know they have negative psychological effects, and I just thought there might be a link as regarding, you know, steroids and depression and then taking the psych drugs. I don't know. It's just a question I came into mind, and I wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, well, that's okay. So thank you for clarifying
you.
That. And that is a logical
I'm
going to
mute
assumption.
Him. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. That is a logical assumption, I think, because the steroids do cause depression, then you're going to, it would lead to, then they're going to end up on an antidepressant, and then now you're talking all the things you've been talking about. So, yeah, that's reasonable to go down that line of thinking.
Yeah. Oh, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for being on the program. Let's, again, the websites are cchr.org. and cchrint.org, and drlogerman.com. And thank you so very much, Doctor, for being on the program today. I so enjoy talking with you, and I'm just so grateful for what you're doing and what CCHR is doing. I just can't say enough about them.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I love talking to you every time, and I really appreciate that you, get the word out as you do. So, we're gonna turn this thing around.
Yes, I believe we can. Thank you so very much.
Yeah.
And bye-bye, listeners, and join me next week. Thank you. Bye-bye for now.
Start with you and me.
Start with you.
Start with you and me.